Nasty.
They were called nasties, and they were nasty.
Some of the things that we've seen are so horrific.
These films not only affect young people, but I believe they affect adults as well.
An extravaganza of gory violence, capable of depraving and corrupting those who watched it.
I have never seen a video nasty. I wouldn't. I actually don't need to see what I know is in that film.
And welcome back to another episode of Doing the Nasty Podcast. This is season number 2, episode number 36. They are desperately trying to kill us. They're all out to get us, but we will find a way. Life finds a way. We're back for another episode. It's been a minor hiatus, don't hate us. We're bringing it back on the closing stretch now. We're just doing anything we can to prolong this season out and make it last another year. It'll never end. Granted, we are, what, after this we've got, I think it's like 4 episodes left or something. We're on the home stretch. Joining me as my co-host for the entirety of season 2, Mr. Mark Ball. How you doing, Mark?
I'm doing great. We're doing the podcast equivalent of if you and me were just like sitting out on the porch, just watching the world go by, and a gap-tooth kid in overalls and no shoes rolls up on his bike with a baseball card in the spokes and says, "Y'all still doing this show?"
No one's missing it, Mark. Which is the good news.
It's a little disconcerting, honestly. Nobody's like, "Where the fuck is this show?"
It makes me feel happy, because if people were actually waiting, like on bated breath, for episodes, I would feel like we were letting someone down. Knowing that no one is chasing us, we're only letting ourselves down, which is fine. Because I feel that way every time I switch on one of these fucking movies. Something like that. There's absolutely no reason I should be doing this to myself. So why do I keep doing it?
It's our service to the world. We're doing it for you guys, not because we want to watch, you know, some of the biggest pieces of shit ever fucking made. Not that either of the movies we're talking about tonight are like, you know,
they're not the worst.
They didn't
ones.
Give me cancer or anything. Yeah, but
yeah. And I mean, we are, like, on the next episode, spoiler alert, they don't get much better. But the episode after that, we get to talk about The Thing.
So, yay!
Almost makes everything that we went through worthwhile. On this episode, we're talking about The Child from 1977 and Superstition, aka The Witch, from 1982. Mark, it has been a hot minute since we last chatted. Have you been up to anything of note?
I can't believe summer is already almost over. We're recording this the like last day or second to last day of July here. Yep. And yeah, the fucking dude, I don't know where the summer went. I haven't camped, I haven't gone to any concerts. I think all I've done all fucking summer long is work, which I guess is okay. I've watched a lot of stuff. We adopted a new kitten like about 3 or 4 weeks ago, and yep, she is a fucking hellraiser. So yeah, best case scenario, my time off, a lot of the time I've been, you know, you get her to burn off some steam, and then hopefully she comes and takes a nap with you on the couch, and you know, you're stuck there for a little while. So been watching quite a bit of stuff on the streamings and stuff. I saw Dark Knight of the Scarecrow for the first time about a week or two ago. I'd never seen that. It was I'm not gonna take full blame for it, because it was kind of unavailable for a really long time. Yeah. Like, I think people were bootlegging that one for until the early 2000s or whenever, like Shout Factory or whoever put it out. But that's a fucking bonkers ass movie. It's got some amazing fucking performances in it. I kind of would have liked a little bit more like actual Scarecrow action going on. You don't ever actually see the Scarecrow do a whole lot, but it's still pretty clever, especially for a made for TV horror movie. It's got a lot going for it. So that was a cool one to tick off the box. Last night we had a little watch party where I watched two movies that should have been, well, one we thought for sure was going to be a video nasty, and then we looked up the date and it was fucking 1988, even though
that's past
even though it looked like it was shot in 78, and that is a little Italian movie called Blood Delirium, I'm pretty sure.
Oh, fuck yeah.
Which I thought, like, we kind of just blindly picked this one off the shelf. None of us really knew anything about this, and I kind of thought I'd remember the title as being an H.G. Lewis movie, but mm-hmm. I'm probably thinking of his other 10 movies that have the word blood in the title. So, yeah, not an H.G. Lewis movie, but a nasty little fucking Italian movie that's just like, another movie about a witch. Like, mm-hmm. this is kind of a easy thing for a lot of horror movies to kind of jam in there at this time point. But yeah, pretty nasty, full of rape, lots of nudity, lots of fucking violence going on. Reminded me, it's kind of an amalgamation of like about six different movies that we've done on this show so far. Mm-hmm. But Vinegar Syndrome put out the disc here in the States. If you're a fan of this show and the stuff we watch on here, I'd recommend it. Most normal people, you might not get that much out of it. And the other thing we watched was the movie Effects, the Pittsburgh produced thing that's got a lot of George Romero alumni in it.
Oh, nice.
Tom Savini and Joe Pilato in it. I had never seen that one. I had heard of it a lot. Mm. That came out a little bit earlier than the other one, so I don't know if that's on either the tier one or tier two video nasty list. I kind of don't know if it is or not, but
it's not, no.
It's got a pretty grubby, grimy, gross, like 8mm kind of vibe to it. It's about like snuff films, basically. Yeah. Sort of. It's, I don't know. I was really intrigued at how kind of abstract this movie was and how open to, it's not really open to interpretation, but it doesn't like spoon feed you shit through the whole thing. You kind of have to figure it out on your own. And really liked it. AGFA, the American Genre Film Archive, put out that one. I think you can also get that through the old Vinegar Syndromes. I have purchased a whole fuck ton of Blu-rays over the summer too. I like most of my fun money went to a lot of Blu-ray purchases this summer. I've got the last horror film, the
fucking the Joe Spinell.
Joe Spinell, yeah. I think Severin, yeah, I'm pretty sure that was a Severin release. They put out a humongous, like one of their super fancy releases that costs like $60 of that one. So I was like, I did really like that one. It was one of the first ones.
It was our very first episode that we did of doing the Nasty Season 2.
Was it that and Invasion of the Blood Farmers? Yeah, that was episode one of this. Okay, yeah. Yeah, so I was like, I gotta own this one. They cleaned it up, and the slipcover that they included with it is this goofy German art that came for it that is super unofficial, and it says Maniac 2 on the fucking front. So
of course,
I was like, I gotta have this. So I got that. I picked up Invasion of the Blood Farmers for cheap. I got that for about $12 in one of Vinegar Syndrome's fucking sales.
So. I love the fact that you're buying all these titles now. Like
Not all of them. I mean, I think eventually I want to own one, but there are definitely a few off this list that I'm not going to go to great lengths or spend great amounts of money to own. But yeah, there are definitely some of these that I'm like, I should probably own these. It's probably going to come up on a podcast again, just because, I don't think either of us will be able to escape being known as being, video nasty nerds after this show ends. So I'm like, these should probably be in my collection, especially if it's like, I think I paid $12 for Invasion of the Blood Farmers. I can do that. I may never watch it again, but at least I can say I own it.
Oh, man. Oh, dear. Yeah, I do the same. I would love to give you some grandstanding lecture here, but that'll, what did they say? Do as I tell you, not do as I do.
Do as I say, not as I do.
That's it. That's the one. similar to yourself, I've, bought a ton of things, but not really watched a ton of things. I think probably the one that's most in line with what we're doing, kind of purchase-wise, is I got that Arrow box set, the one that has all the kind of Charles Band era movies, like Empire or something.
Oh, yeah, I was just looking at that last night. One of my friends picked that up, and it's the presentation on that box set is very nice. That is a beautiful looking box set.
Arrow, that's the one thing. I know they're getting a bit of a bit of shtick at the moment for moving away from the genre. Which are I don't they? Think they are, to be honest with you. I think it's just they're putting out a lot of mainstream titles as well, which they weren't in the past. So they seem to have a lot of licensing deals to do, like limited edition versions of a lot bigger movies. But this one, that's the one thing they've never really lost is their attention to detail and quality, and the actual releases are really, really, really well done. So I've got that, but I've not opened it yet. Open things.
I mean, Vinegar Syndrome's kind of doing the same thing. They put out discs of like Showgirls and Roadhouse, and
I think they reach out to certain companies, and or those companies reach out to them and ask them to put out something, you know, if they're interested in putting out a release of, like Arrow's just put out that Bruce Lee box set, which once again is so off-piste from where the label started, but I'm like, I mean, they're going to do a good job of it, so why are we moaning? Like, I suppose the biggest head-scratcher recently was, to some people, was something like The Wolf of Wall Street, which Arrow put out. But then Arrow have been putting out a few Scorsese movies of late, so that didn't surprise me. So, yeah, I don't know. Some people will moan about things.
Well, it's good business, too. I mean, those are good. The titles like Wolf of Wall Street and, like, didn't they put out Waterworld not very long ago, too? Those are going to be, I think those are easier sells than some of the more obscure stuff. So, I mean, it's kind of it's like the equivalent of a filmmaker, you know, making one for you and then making one for me.
Balances out. If they were only ever putting out niche things, then they wouldn't really make any money.
If they sell a zillion copies of Wolf of Wall Street, then they can afford to put out a couple bizarro things that won't sell as good, probably.
100%. 100%. So, yeah, that's been a bit it for me. I've not really, like I say, a couple of titles have come in that I've been like, oh, yeah, I totally forgot I ordered that. And they've went in the collection, shrink wrap on, and one day I might get around to them. You never know. You never know. I'll tell you what is fucking lush, though. Finally checked out that 4K UHD second sight print of Texas Chainsaw Massacre. And oh my good God almighty.
I need to get that one.
Cleaned up, but still full of that kind of grain. It's the best print you're ever going to see in this movie. That's the bottom line. It's the best you're ever going to have of that movie. And if anyone in NIMS is a better print from now on, I'm not buying it. This is the line that's been drawn in the sand.
This is as good as I need it.
Yeah, Second Sight are really, in the last like 3-4 years, have really stepped up. Genuinely. I think since the Dawn of the Dead release, everything they put out feels like it's more important. And especially through their release of Martin, they've got... I think they're the ones that are handling Near Dark over here, as well as The Hitcher. And The Hitcher on 4K will be the crown jewel of my collection, because I've wanted that movie for fucking years.
I didn't know they were putting out a Near Dark disc. That's super exciting.
I'm sure they were announced as working on something related to Near Dark at least 2 years ago. I've heard nothing about it since, which always is like take things with a pinch of salt. But yeah, I'm looking forward to that as well. Tell you what I am not looking forward to, and that is chatting about these movies, Mark.
Well, one of them.
Both have elements that I can lean into with the degree of, huh, that's kind of interesting, but there's a but on both of them. Right, we've got to talk about. We're doing Superstition and The Child. We're going to start in reverse chronological order. So we're doing Superstition, The Witch, first from 1982. But first, we're going to take a short break. You're going to hear the people from that Video Nasties doc talk about it, and then the trailer for the movie. When we return, myself and Mark are discussing that movie, and we're doing it right after this.
Superstition, aka The Witch, is one of a run of early 80s films on demonic themes. It's the old favourite, you know, the witch who is done to death in Puritan times, who manifests to avenge herself on the community that did her in theory, going after the descendants of the witch finders, in practice just killing whoever else happens to wander through, mostly in gruesome ways involving telekinesis and that sort of omen-y kind of stuff. It's got some fairly tough, gritty, gruesome things in it. It's a reasonably watchable little picture. It's one of those movies that makes a great trailer. Yeah, you will find this trailer probably gives you all you need from the film. It's got all the best bits in it. It's a film that I think I would lump in with Evil Speak, you know, in terms of demonic action from the early 80s. Doesn't star anybody in particular. Stacey Keach's dad is in it. directed by James Roberson, who made an early non-funny film about the American cannibal Alfred Packer. And that's kind of about it. It did get a theatrical release. It's hard to confirm at this late date, but it seems possible that it came out on video and did reasonably well, and then they put it in cinemas, or in very few cinemas, sneakily changing the name. So if you were one of those suckers who'd already seen it, you know, as superstition, you had to pay to see it again as The Witch.
All those stories about murders and ghosts. Haunted, they say. I'm scared.
Two kids were killed out there. One kid was gutted and slashed to death. The other microwave.
There was a warning.
There are many houses on this foundation. All of them and their tenants come to bad ends.
And only one man listened.
Well, when did this violence begin?
There was a legend.
We want justice!
And only one man believed.
Am I too late? Has it already started?
There is a superstition, and will anyone survive? Superstition. The victims who died were the lucky ones. Superstition.
And welcome back. So, you just heard some stuff about Superstition, The Witch from 1982. This movie, directed by James W. Robertson, and written by Galen Thompson, Michael O. Sajbel, and Brett Thompson Pleat. The movie stars James Houghton, Albert Salmi, Lynn Carlin, Larry Pennell, Jacqueline Hyde, Robert Simmons, Heidi Bohe, Melo McCaslin, that's her name, Carol Goldman, Stacey Keach,
that's the father of Sergeant Stadenko, as we know him, correct?
That is correct. Kim Mary, Billy Jean, and some other folks are in here as well. Synopsis is listed on the IMDb's is a witch put to death in 1692 swears vengeance on her persecutors and returns to present day to punish them and their descendants. Well, punish their descendants.
1692 is a weird, odd number. I don't know what the significance of that is exactly.
No one did research in this movie, Mark.
It's not even like a nice even like 300 years before this movie came out. It's like 280-something. It's early here for math, but that seemed odd to me, and I never figured out why.
Yeah.
Why they did that.
While you're talking, I am Googling the date of the Salem witch trials, which were 1692. So there you go.
Okay, duh.
there we go. But I get the feeling someone literally went, when did the Salem witch trials happen? 1692. That's good enough for my script.
There's probably one line in there that mentions the Salem witch trials that I just was, you know, fighting the cat or something during. Well,
I think my thought on that was that it's about, like, anything witch related in America is always Salem. It's like no one else was burned as being a witch anywhere else in America. It only happened in Salem. right? So that's the be all and end all. Right, so this movie is like a weird one. So this is like 1982. So we are kind of heading, believe it or not, towards the end of the boom of the slasher movie, which kind of started to peter out about 1984. So we're already well in the swing of it. And this movie is like, it has all the, it looks like, smells like, and tastes like a slasher movie. But yeah, it's got this supernatural element, which kind of tries to take it away from that, almost tries to remove it from the genre, yet it's playing to all the tropes. And I'm not quite sure why. You know, it kind of almost feels like on some level there was a kind of compromise made somewhere, and that someone had a script for a witch movie, and they were like, witch movies won't sell just now, slashers are all the things, and they were like, oh, let's just bring it to modern times. Let me tell you what I like about this movie. This movie, surprisingly violent. like to the point where I was actually kind of, I was like, what date was this? Like, genuinely was surprised that the movie came out in 1982, which isn't the heyday of the MPA slashing shit. Well, that's a couple of years removed from this, but at the same time, it does not spare the gore and the killing. It's all in on that one. I suppose my biggest surprise was, one, this is on the any nasty list, because it clearly pitches its stall earlier on that it's supernatural. And we've mentioned this before, as soon as you add that supernatural element to a movie, it kind of makes it ridiculous for me, which kind of removes it from contention of corrupting the youth. It's the same reason I don't think like a Freddy Krueger movie should be on like a nasties list, because it's a dream monster that's killing you. Or the same reason I don't think a zombie movie, even though plenty of zombie movies were on the list, because as soon as you're bringing back the dead to kill people, it's moving it to the fantastical. It's different when you're dealing with like, oh right, it's a deranged sex pervert who's going around killing women. That could happen, has happened, will still happen. So that I get a bit of that. But this one grims itself so far in the realms of the kind of the supernatural world that, you know, it kind of removes it from that. That and the fact that the chick in this movie, our main witchy doodle, is like, she is just like straight up angry, Mark. Like all the way through this movie, she's just pissed off. She's like, look what you did to my peeps. My peeps were unfairly maligned and burned as being witches because you thought we were evil. So this is how I will reenact my revenge by doing evil shit. So like literally becoming the thing that she said that she wasn't. It really, really kind of, right, the acting's not great, right? The dialogue is not horrible, although there's a couple of lines in here where the eyes did roll back a little bit. It's shot well. It's not shot like super cheap. It's shot okay for what it is. And all the monies went into the gore effects, clearly. And it's got an okay cast. And the soundtrack was fine. But this is a thin story. And they've stretched this out for about an hour and a half. And about the halfway mark, this movie was starting to feel a bit of its runtime for me. And then it pushes towards a fairly climactic end, and it has a relatively high body count for what it is. But yeah, I did kind of feel, I kind of felt this movie was the typical one and done. You know, it's one of those ones where, like, if you bought it as a blind purchase and you sat and you watched it, you'd probably be like, huh, I'm kind of glad that I watched that movie. But I can't see myself like ever like fastly returning to it, unless I was stacking up a list of movies that I was doing for like a night of showings of movies that are slasher movies that aren't, then Superstition might fall into that. I'll tell you one thing it did have like in spades, and that, like, see that cover artwork for this movie? I fucking love it. I have that on my wall. It's got like a proper kind of Italian kind of horror movie look about it, but that's about as far as I can go with this one, really. It's yeah, so like time is like, see, the remaster of this movie has made certain of the prosthetics look fucking horrible, like the head, the severed head. Like, I mean, even my fucking child could do a paper mache head, which would look better than this. But like the, like, see the hanging and the elevator, really fucking cool effect. Like, I'd like, I was watching that going, that's really, really well done. Like, it's good old fashioned.
That's a great dummy.
Yeah, it's like really, 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 really well done. So yeah, I don't know. I get the feeling that the late 70s Italian stuff probably had an effect on this. Especially the way it's shot, it has that kind of like a lot of smoke, like a lot of smoke machines, blown fog. But yeah, as I don't know what I'm trying to say. I enjoyed the death. I enjoyed the killing. Some of the supernatural elements were all right. The rest of the movie was a bit meh. What about you? What did you make of Superstition?
I think I like this a lot more than you did. I kind of fucking loved this movie, actually. This movie has some insane fucking gore effects, a few of which in the first about 10 minutes or so. Like, I think this has a really great kind of cold open with the kids necking in the car, and then they get scared off by obvious fake dummy that these prankster kids are doing, and then they fuck off into the very clearly fucking haunted, creepy ass abandoned house where the spirit of the witch is hanging out. And one dude gets he gets slammed up into the ceiling, and then his head gets ripped off apparently and shoved into a fucking microwave.
Yeah,
which they do the great thing where the head explodes in the microwave, but the door has to be open on the microwave so that we can actually see it exploding, even though it's totally not how microwaves work. And then the other kid goes and gets himself stuck in a window and gets sawed in fucking half by the thing, and his torso falls out of the window and his legs fall back into the house, and it's all done practical, and it all I thought it all looked fucking fantastic. The older, they kind of they pulled kind of a switcheroo, because I really thought this movie was going to be like young priest, old priest, like an exorcist kind of thing going with it, and then they fucking kill the old priest like really early in the movie, and that's one of the best kills in this movie, where the there's like a bunch of handymen working on the house, and this dude's got a circular saw, and the fucking blade just like magically falls off of it and flies across the room, and it's pretty obvious it's just a saw blade on a string or whatever. You know, this is 82, so everything's done practically, and the blade hits him in the fucking belly. It goes all the way through him like it's a phantasm murder ball or something. Like, I loved bits and pieces of this. It does definitely suffer towards the middle. I kind of think like a really easy way to have solved this would have been to have taken the prologue about what happens to the witch and maybe shorten that up a little bit and stick it at the beginning of the movie. Make that your cold open. Like, cause it's, I mean, if you've seen the trailer or you read the fucking box, you know what this movie is about. It's not really spoiling anything that this is about a witch. In fact, in certain parts of the world, it's called The Witch. Yep. So, I mean, like, I think that would have helped. Movies do this a lot, I feel like, where you get your backstory way late in the movie and it kind of bogs down the pace because the movie kind of has to come to a grinding halt. And the story that we've been following all up till this point, like, just comes to a complete fucking stop while we go, you know, 10 or 15 minute scene of backstory about a witch being burnt, which, yeah, we've seen a zillion times in movies. Like, this could have been, that part of it could have been shortened way, way down, and this would have been, you know, closer to like an 85 or 80 minute movie, and I think it would have been just about perfect. But really, really high body count. This is kind of a perfect, I think, like tier 3 movie, because it is like, the violence is fantastical, and it's fairly cartoony with how much blood it fucking throws around, but it is, I think, you know, a little nastier than especially a lot of the American slasher movies that would come out a couple years after this, when the MPA started to take a fucking hedge trimmer to them and cut out all the violence. This kind of slips under that, and Accomplishes quite a bit, I think. And I dug this movie quite a bit. I'd never even heard of this. I guess this played at Fantastic Fest a couple years ago, and Shout Factory put out a really that's the version that I watched on. You can rent this on Amazon. I don't think it's streaming for free anywhere. But that cleaned up version is on Amazon Prime. And I checked Shout Factory's website last night, and there were 5 copies of this still available. Wow. So I snagged one of them. They might all be gone by the time this episode comes out, but if not, if you dig this, if you check this movie out and dig it, you better jump on that, because yeah, there's only a couple copies of this left. But I like this quite a bit. I would almost call this like a, maybe not a strong recommend, but if you're, you know, playing along at home, I think this is gonna be one people are gonna enjoy a lot more than some of the stuff that we've watched on here. Did you know there's an unofficial sequel to this?
I did not.
It's called Witch Story, or I think in other parts of the world it's known as Superstition 2. It's on YouTube, and it's full. If you search for Superstition, it pops up. I started watching it last night, and I looked at a few of the comments on the YouTube video where people were like, this movie is fucking dog shit compared to the first
mission.
Superstition.
Abort the mission.
Yeah, this is like an unofficial sequel. This is like a Zombie 2 to Dawn of the Dead kind of thing, where I don't think any of the people had anything to do with this, and they might have just had a crappy witch movie they called Superstition 2, but that apparently exists.
Since we're throwing weird facts in here, Dick Albane worked on the mechanical effects in this movie. He also worked on Nightmare on Elm Street 2.
Oh, really?
Which I think means he did the fucking exploding budgie.
Probably. He's you know.
The exploding budgie guy worked on this movie. Wait, that just tickled me. Well, I just just think we'll be quiet about it. He was like, I know that name. How did I know that name? And I was like, he didn't fucking Nightmare 2? And then, of course, I then got all those mental flashbacks to Nightmare 2, which just made me smile. I love that movie. Cool. Right. Let's talk grades here. For the listeners out there who have forgotten because it's been so long since our last episode, we don't give it numbers. Instead, we sentence movies based on the ferocity of their oeuvre. The worst grade that any movie can get here is, you know, a hard time. And that's generally reserved for the movies that be full of the rape, or cannibalism, or anywhere in between. We also have a little community service. We have a slap on the wrist and a case dismissed. There's gnarly gore in here, but I couldn't see. We've talked about it before. It's the preface of this one is set in the supernatural world, which kind of nulls it a little bit for me. But that being said, I wouldn't say it's like a case dismissed by any stretch of the imagination. So instead, I'm going to slap this one firmly on the wrist. What about yourself, Mark?
I'm gonna go the same. This is a slap on the wrist. The violence in this was just gnarly enough that I was kind of surprised by it. Like, I didn't really know anything about this movie going into it, and when shit starts popping off, I was like, oh wow, this is kind of movie. But it was in like kind of a pleasant way. It's not like when you're watching something and like something happens and you're like, oh no, this movie's just gonna like beat up on me mentally all the way through. This is a really fun movie. Like, I think this would make a great group watch with a few of your rowdy friends coming over and having a few beers. So I can't really give this anything stronger than a slap on the wrist.
Nice. Right, well, ladies and gents, we've got another movie to discuss. Oh, yes, we do. This one not at all influenced by Night of the Living Dead. Not even a little bit. Never happened. So we are going to be discussing The Child from 1977. Ladies and gents, we're going to take a short break. You're going to hear learned people, much smarter than me and Mark, talk about why they think this movie was on the list. And then you're going to hear me and Mark actually discuss the movie itself and maybe why it was on the list. I don't know. This one is a total head scratcher for me. And we'll get into it when you've heard the trailer right after this.
Right, so we have The Child by Robert Voskanian. Now, this is one of my favourites. I wrote a book a few years ago called Nightmare USA, and it's one of the titles that got me interested in the area and made me determined to write the book. And when I made a list of people I wanted to reach, I was desperate to reach the guy that made this film. So strange. Immediately, you just think, what world are we in here? I don't know where we are. It seems to be set in the past. No one actually refers to this, but there's very, very old cars, and people look a little out of time. It was all filmed at a soon-to-be-demolished house on the property belonging to an oil company, the Standard Oil Company. You see some sort of like oil pumps in the background at various times. It's got a kind of no-man's land feel to it. You're away from the main roads. There are some roads. The heroine arrives, drives down a sort of a dirt path at the beginning of the film. But there's this strange kind of interzone feeling where you just think, it doesn't seem to belong anywhere. We're in California, but, you know, there are no traces of modern California in it. And then within 2 or 3 minutes, she crashes the car and climbs out and has to walk through some woodland, and there's tilted angles and bizarre music. They throw everything at you straight away, so the whole film feels bizarre from the very beginning. The music is a kind of a mixture of very, very melodramatic piano runs that sound like Richard Clayderman warming up before a concert, you know, and then with synthesizers from, you know, the dark ages of synthesizers, a really sort of raw sort of electronic sounds as well. It's a great combination. It's just one of those things you think, what are you doing to us? This sounds like an old-fashioned Mills and Boone romance with the BBC Radiophonic Workshop sort of jamming over the top of it, which is just bliss. And it's also got kind of the kind of performances that come from inexperienced filmmakers having to make do with who they can find. So some people are good. The lead girl, the child herself, is excellent. Very, very creepy, scary, sarcastic, mocking, insolent sort of girl. The kind of girl that John Waters would have cast in a movie, you know, she's just great. Then you get characters like this old lady who takes up quite a bit of the first 20 minutes of the film. I don't know if you remember those adverts for like kind of Stanner stairlifts in that used to get on television, where you get some old dear saying, sort of like, my niece bought me this, and sort of like they're kind of deliberately done so she doesn't sound like a professional actor. Well, she sounds like she's come from one of those ads. The acting styles are all over the place. That just creates turbulence, interesting turbulence in the film, you know. Sometimes people feel like they're skilled, sometimes they're unskilled, but it just wrenches you around in the film and makes everything feel unpredictable. So I don't mind that she's kind of rough around the edges. It kind of works. It was made by a guy called Robert Voskanian, who was born in Iran, but he's of Armenian descent. And then when he moved to America, he studied film at film school in California. And whilst he was there, he met a guy called Robert Dadashian, and they became very, very good friends. And Dadashian, born in Germany, was also an Armenian. His family were Armenian as well. So I suppose you could say, in a way, this is an Armenian horror film made in America. The director and the producer both have the same family background. And the DP was Iranian as well. So it's a very unusual sort of mix, which, I don't know, maybe accounts for some of the slightly exotic and unusual, untypical feel of the film. Doesn't feel like a normal American exploitation film. It's also dubbed, which makes it feel a bit Euro as well, you know, a bit kind of Euro horror, because it's entirely post-synced. It's also quite surprisingly gory at times. I mean, it starts out seeming like it's just kind of a weirdo horror film, you know, where most of the fun is going to be the strange style of the thing. But then suddenly scenes pop up, you think, oh, that's actually quite grisly. And you'd almost grown used to it, just enjoying it for strangeness' sake. And then you get faces ripped off. And towards the end, some really rather thrilling and exciting zombie material as well. Because the plot involves a little girl who has psychic influence and congress with zombies that are living in the local cemetery. You know, it's never explained what the hell's going on. She's just friends with the corpses that hang out at the cemetery, over whom she has some sort of control. So if anyone pisses her off, then she just sends her friends to go and get them. And towards the end, as you see more and more of these living dead creatures, it turns into sort of a Night of the Living Dead situation. Apparently the director and the producer, when they were trying to decide what kind of film to make, discussed Night of the Living Dead and said, well, this made a whole lot of money for a very small outlay. Let's try and do something similar. But it's got a lot of other elements in there as well. It's got the kind of the bad seed element of a vicious sort of child, and, you know, psychic elements as well, which are a mile away from the usual kind of zombie sort of story. Generally speaking, a very unpredictable mixture of elements and a very out there visual style. And I think really one of the most special and unusual films in this particular bracket of movie making that I've seen. I think maybe the reason why it attracted the attention of people looking to censor or remove these films from the shelves is maybe the fact that it
centered around a child, and the idea being that, you know, here's a child who's presumably been exposed to graphic horror in the making of the film. Maybe they were worried about that. There are a couple of, as I say, a couple of bloody moments which stand out. It's hard to say because it's not sleazy. That's the thing. There's no sex. So there's no... There's none of that kind of mixture of sex and horror which really rings a lot of alarm bells for the censorious. In this case, it's some amusing, pleasantly splashy gore moments and a scary child. I don't know if maybe it was just the fact that a child and the horror stuff were being brought into conjunction. That's the closest thing I can think of as a possibility.
The face of an angel. The heart of a killer. The power of the devil.
I want to know who you're meeting in the cemetery.
I don't have to tell you anything.
I'm going to work for them. I'm going to take care of Rosalie Norton. The death of parents when a child is rather young, it leaves you feeling so alone.
I have friends. They do favors for me.
What kind of favors?
You'll find out.
Stay right here. I'll be right back.
All right, who's in here? Rosalie, stop it!
They're gonna come and hurt you both. Hurt you bad.
The child wants to play hide and go kill.
Who's in here?
Her power is unearthly.
You go away, Rosalie. Go away and leave me alone.
Her acts, monstrous. Her secret, electrifying. Of unspeakable evil. Ah! Ah! The child, a terrifying thriller.
Welcome back. So, The Child, from 1977. This one directed by Robert Voskanian, potentially, I don't know. Based on the screenplay by Ralph Lucas, the movie itself stars Laurel Barnett, Rosalie Cole, Frank Janssen, Richard Hanners, Ruth Ballin, or Ballin. She'd be ballin'. Slossen Bing Jong. That's a name, right? I didn't just make that up. Also kind of sounds like the noise I make when I'm really angry and I've just stubbed my toe on something. Jong!
I actually did that this morning. I bought a new keyboard stand for all my synthesizers, and this thing has a weight limit of like about 600 fucking pounds. Yep. So it's built like a tank and totally caught my little toe on it walking to feed the cat this morning, and I made some sounds, all right.
Made some noise. Right, let's talk a little bit about the synopsis for this one. A newly hired housekeeper arrives to her employer's house in the countryside. She slowly discovers that the only child in the house, an 11-year-old girl, hides a deadly secret. Right. That Mark, you go first on this.
Did you see my Letterboxd review of this movie?
I have not. While you're talking, I'm reading it right now though.
Super short and simple. This is Lucio Fulci's Kathy's Curse. This definitely starts off very we get the new nanny. She's on her way out into the fucking countryside, out to the spooky ass house, and Donkey Kong. Donkey Kong throws a barrel in the road. I totally stole that joke from the Video Nasty project. I apologize. But her car slides very gently off of the road, like one tire off the road. Yeah. So she's like, well, fuck it, it's trashed. I guess I got to get out and start walking, which I thought was hilarious. There's a lot of cliches in this movie. She starts walking. She meets the neighbor of the people that she's going to go be a babysitter basically for. The lady warns her. She's like, "Oh, those people are kind of weird, and I don't really get along with them very well. Good luck." And she goes, and sure enough, it's a big creepy fucking house with a creepy little girl and her dad, who's kind of fucked up mentally, and his wife has just died. And lots of things happen in this movie. I watched this about three times because it's on YouTube. So I definitely watched this all the way through once and then tried watching this two other times to kind of just like refresh it in my brain. And I kept falling asleep in this movie. So the middle chunk of this is like really kind of fucking boring, and I don't remember a whole lot of this. But
it's so slow.
Basically, like what kind of ends up happening is the little girl in this family fucks off in the middle of the night a lot to go hang out in the cemetery, and there's a lot of back and forth about what are you doing out in the cemetery? I'm out visiting my friends. Who are your friends? I can't tell you.
That's like a sample in a Rob Zombie song as well.
Yeah,
the way you're doing it in the cemetery, and of course it is.
Visiting your friends.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's definitely the little girl is not quite like this. Calling this Fulci's Kathy's Curse is kind of an insult to Kathy's Curse, because that movie goes like way further with the fucked up kid kind of deal, and the little girl in that movie says some hilariously awful things and has some fucking great dialogue. This is kind of, there's like one scene where they laugh about a group of like the father tells a story to the new nanny about a story of like a bunch of Boy Scouts eating some poisonous plant and the whole lot of them die, and they're all laughing maniacally at this fucking story except for the nanny, who looks horrified. That's about the extent of the Kathy's Curse thing. Other than that, it's just like a evil kid movie through most of this, until it turns into a zombie movie towards the end.
Yeah,
which I think is probably there's a few really horribly goofy fucking things in the scene, but I think that's the climax. About the last 10 minutes of this is probably its strong point. We get some kind of cool zombies. The zombies look pretty unique. I'm not super sure what kind of influence they were going for, but they're not like, they're not your typical zombies. I don't really know what kind of look like the location and the zombies themselves. This reminded me of Resident Evil 5 a little bit, because you come out the desert. It's like a little bit like they're just like wandering around like an abandoned oil refinery or something. But there's a few cool bits at the end of this of them fighting the zombies. There's one bit where they get locked in like a shack basically, and there's a zombie kind of trying to come out from like the cellar, and not the nanny, but like some dude, I think he's a neighbor or a son or related to the creepy fucked up family somehow, spends about 5 minutes kicking and hitting a zombie to try and get it to go back down in the door. It goes on for fucking ever. It's just like, what are we doing here? I think they just shot the same thing 10 times and just put all of the footage of the movie in it. One other thing about this movie, the soundtrack, the score to this, there's a really great like main theme to this movie that sounds like it was written by an actual composer, and it's how it opens the movie. The rest of the soundtrack is a dude that threw a fucking cat on a piano, and it just plays over and over and over again. And it's maybe one of the most annoying soundtracks I've ever fucking heard. Especially when you keep falling asleep to this movie and you wake up and it's just like bang, 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 doodle, 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 do. And I did this yesterday. I woke up just fucking angry that this movie was playing, and the music was so fucking grating. And just like, I think the main theme was written by a different composer than the rest of this. And the guy that did the rest was somebody that couldn't play music.
From what I can see on the list on IMDb, the musical production supervisor was a guy called Bob Platt. However, the performer who played on the Polymoog synthesizer, the programmer, was a guy named Michael Quattro. And it looks like Michael Quattro only did 3 movies. I'm assuming the one that he did in 2019 was actually reusing things from elsewhere. So yeah, he did The Child, which looks like his first thing that he did, and then he did an episode of The Bob Braun Show in 1979, which was a TV series where I believe he actually maybe played himself, and then I think some of his music was then used in a movie called Susie Q, which was released in 2019. So yeah, I think Susie Q. Well, here we go. Story of trailblazing American rock singer songwriter Susie Quattro, who must be related to the same surname, has to be. So there you go. On paper, Mark, there will be people that would say, you know what, this is a Duncan movie because it's got that kind of Italian horror feel, kind of soft focus camera, lots of moody atmosphere, lots of very Italian zombie style camera movements and lighting setups, and Duncan's going to love this. And this movie bored me to fucking tears. This is an hour and 20 minutes long.
It feels like 3 hours long.
It goes on forever. His biggest problem is trying to set up the malevolence of the little girl. And that's what I kept coming back to over and over again, is that it kept forcing you to come back to the fact that the child is, oh, the child, and what's wrong with the child, and look at the child. And that became a distraction for me overall. And when I was watching it more and more, I just kind of felt myself being dragged more and more into it in the wrong way. Like, I became hypercritical. Now, I'd already seen this one before, so I knew what I was getting into. This one is in the American Horror Project, released by Arrow, and the second box set. And the second box set is hit or miss. The first box set is fucking great. The second one is all over the shop. And when I recorded this one, now who did I do this with? Was this with Derek? Maybe with Derek. Like last year, maybe even 2 years ago. I think Derek was higher on this than I was. And as a result of that, I kind of knew what I was getting coming into this one for a second time. But as a result of that, I kind of... there was no surprise for me, which I think made it feel like it was longer. If that makes sense. So it just felt like, because I'd already seen it before, because I already knew what I was getting, I kind of was like, right, I can now concentrate on all the stuff that isn't the plot. And turns out you don't want to concentrate on a lot of the stuff that isn't the plot, because there isn't a lot of plot. It's like, you're right, Mark, the last 10 minutes are where the movie starts to kind of shine a little bit. It kind of finds its feet, and had that happened earlier in the movie, it might have worked a bit better, but it really comes in a little bit too late. The zombie stuff looks good. The zombies themselves have got fucking amazing makeup. Like, genuinely really, really good. It looks like fleeky, burnt skin.
Yeah.
I love that. So I was like, yes, this is cool. But it's too little too late. The little girl speaking to herself in the graves. Okay, why is this woman sticking around here? See, when the neighbour says, oh, I don't really like those people up there, they're a bit weird, and then you walk up to the house and lightning's cracking behind it and there's mist and fog around it, you don't go up to the house. you know what, maybe the crazy lady down the road was right. Every now and again, a crazy Ralph is right, Mark. That's what you need to remember. Every now and again,
they could have thrown in a line somewhere about like the nanny, you know. A real easy motivation could have been that she's horribly desperate for money. Would have been a good thing, and he could have done that with like one line as to why she doesn't leave. She's like, my mom's gonna lose her house if I don't get fucking paid for this job, or something along those lines. I think would have fixed a little bit of that motivation.
Yeah, like I say, the biggest problem with this movie is I think it spends too much time trying to be atmospheric and not trying to be a movie. And that ultimately dooms it. I think when you are consistently wanting to like it because the atmosphere is a horror movie, you know what I mean? The atmosphere feels like a horror movie, but none of the content does. That becomes off-putting. It also stretches things out because you're constantly on, not the edge of your seat, but you're constantly waiting for it to drop. And it drops so late in the day that it becomes just overall a very frustrating watch. It reminded me of recently I did that Bob Clark box set that was released by 101 Films. And the first movie in that, in fact, give me a second, as he says, reaching for it. From the old collection here. The first movie in this one is Children Shouldn't Play With Dead Things.
Oh, okay.
And
this does have vibes of that, kind of.
It's totally got the same vibes. It takes so long for like anything to happen in that movie, and when it happens at the end, it's too late.
I think that movie has better characters, though. Like, I don't really give a fuck about any of the characters in this.
It's a better movie. It's a better movie. I think it's the reason I said it's not, you know, this movie's not influenced by Night of the Living Dead. The reason I said that statement is that I think when Night of the Living Dead came out, I think a lot of, and rightly so, a lot of filmmakers were like, we don't need a studio system to make a movie. We can just go out and make a fucking movie. And I love that, like, ethos. If it wasn't for movies like that, movies like this, we wouldn't have movies like Evil Dead. We wouldn't have an independent scene that runs as hard as it does. But I think there's a lot of people that were just like, this is how these movies are made, as opposed to let's do our version of a movie like that. I think they fall into trappings, and those trappings ultimately always end up back with zombies, which are cheap to do.
Well, yeah, it can go either way. It can be, you know, it can be an extremely cynical thing, kind of like with found footage movies where, you know, producers or whatever, like, this is cheap as fuck and they make a lot of money. Yeah. Or it could be like me when I was, you know, 12, 13, 14 and saw Night of the Living Dead and Evil Dead for the first time. And I was like, these guys made this for super cheap and they're fucking great movies. And this is something I could do probably.
Yeah. And I think overall, like I say, I commend anyone that wants to like make a movie. You know what I mean? I think everyone should, like, if you have the urge to do it, fucking go and do it. But the other part of me is kind of like this movie would not be known at all in any way, shape, or form had it, like, to an extent, not been on the nasty list. I think that's ultimately where I come down on it. I was kind of just watching it going, this has all the feel of like just like a movie that is getting a lot of attention because of the list that was on, which is kind of counterproductive to what the list was actually designed for. I didn't hate it. That's my biggest issue with it is that it takes a long time to go where it wants to go, and the payoff isn't necessarily worth the journey. The frustrating thing about it is all the base components are there. Like the zombie, like, they can do zombies, they should be earlier in the movie. They can do atmosphere, they should just use it better. And like you said, the main theme of this is fucking great. The rest of the score is, it's kind of like they get the first bit right and then they just don't know how to sustain it in any way, shape, or form throughout the entire movie. The performances are not bad, but you are right, there's not one likable, careable character in this. So it's just a very, very, very boring, frustrating watch. But it's, you know, for a movie that was made with very little money, it's actually fucking very well put together. So I don't know. I went back and checked, because I remember having watched it for podcast Under the Stairs, and did it with Derek, I think. I went back and I listened to the episode, and I came out of that at a 3.5 out of 5, somewhere between I liked it and I really liked it. Now I would probably be down at a 2.5 to a 3 on the rewatch, because like I say, it takes too long to get anywhere. I don't dislike this movie. It's just it baffles me that it's on the list. Completely baffles me that it's on the list. And two, it's the sort of movie I wish I liked more. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
In a lot of respects, it ticks a lot of those boxes for things that I have a really strong interest in. And it has that Italian aesthetic. It has that feel about it. Just utilised a smarter way to be a much better movie. I mean, the way this is shot is not that dissimilar to how a movie like Phantasm is shot. And Phantasm's only like a year, 2 years after this. You know, it's got that kind of dreamy, kind of almost like soft focus feel, which I love. It doesn't have any of the wit or the charm of a Phantasm to give it the kind of staying power to make anything other than just a very, very, very painfully average movie. So
it's got all the elements, just a poor execution of those.
Yeah, none of the execution, really, I think. It's a shame.
I kind of think this, I looked this up this morning, actually. I think this might have landed on the list as a guilt by association kind of thing, because I saw the name Harry Novak pop up as he's listed as a producer on this. I was like, I know that name from somewhere. That sounds really familiar. I looked it up. According to Google, Harry Novak is the sexploitation king and produced and distributed a prolific number of exploitation films from the early 60s to the mid-70s, including William Rossler's cult classics The Agony of Love and Mantis in Lace, and the influential monster nudie Kiss Me Quick, among many others.
Yeah.
So this dude made a lot of sleazy shit through the 60s and 70s and was kind of known for that. And I almost think this is kind of more him taking a swing at something a little outside of that. This is still very much a sleazy exploitation kind of movie, but it's a lot less on there's really no like sexual content in this. Really, this is kind of more of a straight up horror movie. So I kind of think this is maybe him taking a swing at something a little bit more legitimate than a lot of the
diversify. You know what I mean? I think like in this time period, like when we talk about the kind of independent spirit of making these sorts of movies, it really is like you like knocking on doors and speaking to people that are like dentists, lawyers, you know, doctor, like all these things, and saying, do you want to invest in the movie? According to IMDb, the estimated budget for this movie was $30,000.
Ooh, that's cheap.
So there you go. So there you are. Yeah, let's bring this. I'm not even going to go through the entire list again here. This one is a case dismissed for me. I honestly didn't find anything about it, even when the zombies come in, because like I said before, as soon as you put zombies in your movie, I'm instantly at the point where I'm like, this is all farcical. But it doesn't really have the teeth at all to move anything beyond a case dismissed for me. What about yourself?
Same. Night of the Living Dead is gorier and more disturbing than this. It came out a full 30 plus years before this movie came out. There's not, and even in tone, like this doesn't go anywhere near a lot of creepy kid movies. Like, what's the one we just did a few episodes ago? Alice, Sweet Alice, I think, is fucking way more disturbing and dark and greasy and gross than this movie.
Another movie that uses that soft focus Italian inspired like production in terms of how it looks and all the rest, but like it's got the substance, you know, and the execution, which is the difference. You need both of them. You can't just rely on one over the other.
This just doesn't.
No. Right, let's take a short break. You're going to hear a promo for Dern Show, because it's the only one I play, because both myself and Mark really like Dern. Any chance to plug that motherfucker show, I will do it. When we return, we're closing out this episode right after this.
This is a test of the emergency podcasting system. Listen to the Psychosemantic Podcast. Politics, movies, and political movies. Find us on Facebook, iTunes, Stitcher, LegionPodcasts.com, the Psychosemantic Podcast.
And you've been listening to Doing the Nasty Podcast. This has been season number 2, episode number 36, the 5th to final episode of the season. That's right, we're on the serious countdown now. We are finishing this year. Right? I'm putting my fucking foot down, Mark. We are finishing this fucking thing this year, if it kills me. However, the next episode might fucking kill me. On the next episode, we are doing A couple of good old fashioned fun movies. The first one is Terror. Right now, there'll be some people out there that go, "That sounds like it'll be fun."
It's a Norman J. Warren movie, right?
This is our buddy Norman J. Warren. Oh, Norman.
Director of Insomnioid. Was that the one he did? Okay, yep. Yeah.
And he also did Prey.
Oh yeah, I love Prey. Insomnioid's not bad either. I think you can find both of those on either YouTube or Tubi. They're both floating around out there. Prey, I would definitely recommend. Duncan wasn't quite so high on that one.
Ooh, Prey is a long haul. Terror is a slasher movie, right? So like this is like just he's out and out. Norman G. Warren making a slasher. However, because it's a Warren, Norman J. Warren one, we're gonna have some sort of weird, bizarre element in here. So let me give you the synopsis. And I wonder if this doesn't just sound like we're just repeating this week. The descendants of a witch hunting family and their close friends are stalked by a killer. Stalked and killed by a mysterious entity. So the descendants of a witch-hunting family, flipping the script, and their close friends are stalked and killed by a mysterious entity.
Terror. Well, after Prey and Insomnioid, I don't know what the fuck we're going to get this one with this one. Is available on YouTube in a pretty good print, and yep. I think might be on Tubi also. I actually have the Blu-ray of this that I blind bought a zillion years ago, and I have never watched it.
So I'd done this 2 years ago or last year. Like, me and Derek started doing box set stuff together, and this was in the Norman J. Warren box set. So I've covered this with him. We will, however, be swinging in with a little movie called Cannibal or Cannibals or Mondo Cannibale. Now, this is where everything gets confusing. My understanding is get this right. Mondo Cannibale or Cannibal or Cannibals is the Ruggiero Deodato movie.
Okay.
We are going to talk about this off air because I have found at least another movie which is listed as Cannibals, which I'm not sure which one it is, if I'm honest. So I think it's this one. I think it's Deodato, which would make fucking sense because... like as soon as Cannibal Holocaust went on the bad list, they went a hunting for everything Deodato. But it might not be this one, it might be a different one. So we'll clear it up in the interim and we'll post it on the page. But this one is the one that he made, I think, first out of his three that he did the trilogy ending with Cannibal Holocaust. So I think this is the first one from 77. Synopsis for this one. An oil prospector is captured and imprisoned by a violent and primitive cannibal tribe in the Philippine rainforest. He manages to escape with a female hostage and begins searching for his missing companion and their aeroplane.
So it sounds like every other fucking cannibal movie. This and one other cannibal movie on the fucking list left.
In fairness, this one's an earlier one, though. So this is 77. So...
Well, I don't know what that means exactly. It might be a little more because as these things went on, it just became like a big competition of one-upsmanship between all of them. So maybe this one won't be so bad.
Yeah, I don't know, but I've seen this one before. It's not very good. I've just double checked. This is the correct one. So a part of the trivia says, although the UK cinema version was heavily cut, and by heavily cut, I mean it was chopped quite a bit. The pre-certification video release on the Duran label featured the uncut print, was regularly seized by police during the video Nasty scare. However, it was never listed as an official Nasty, and the only prosecution result verdict ended up in a not guilty. So, yeah. Once again, I will do the official double triple check to make sure it is this movie, but I think it's this movie. And if it's not this movie, then it's another movie, probably with the same script. Oh dear, what we're doing. Yeah, you're right, we do have, just to remind people, the remaining movies that we still have to do are Brutes and Savages, which we're coupling with The Thing, then a movie called Blood Song, which we're covering with The Toy Box, The Black Room, which we're covering with Wrong Way, and then Abducted, aka Schoolgirls in Chains, with Zombie Holocaust, which will be your final movie, and we'll bring series to a close. Rough ending. There's no getting around that. Like, we are good at, like, The Thing is the only thing that's going to get me through this. Like, honestly, I can't imagine there's going to be another Mafia Massacre on the back end.
No, but I mean, I haven't seen any of the rest of those movies except for The Thing, so you never know. Maybe there will be one that will surprise me. I'll be like, oh, this actually fucking rips. I'm trying to stay hopeful.
Always stay hopeful. So, Mark, you're a busy guy. You're doing things. Where can people check out your stuff?
I'd love it if you listen to some of my music. That's at fancymark.bandcamp.com. I actually have like an entire album like that's been done for a couple months that I intended to put out back in May, and I haven't had fucking time to go back and master it and make sure everything sounds good, basically. But it should be coming soon. I might put out a couple singles before the end of the year. Got some shows kind of early to be announced, but playing some shows here pretty soon. I usually talk about that shit on either Facebook, or you can follow me at Instagram. That's at the Fancy Mark. If anybody's got a Blue Sky code they want to send me, that'd be super dope, because I think Twitter is about to fucking crash and burn. So not the greatest platform to be promoting shit on. So yeah, send me a fucking Blue Sky code, somebody, please hurry. I think that's about it. I was just on Darren's show a little while ago, like a couple weeks ago. That episode came out where he talked about They Them and a few other goofy things. I'm sure I'll be back on that show here before too long. So yeah, be sure and check out Darren. Be sure and check out the other shows on the Teapots Collective. Mm. You've been busy with...
Finally finished Opera Omnia.
That's right.
Mega delay in putting out the last episode of that for Alex Garland, discussing Men, which fucking amazing movie.
That's what JP is.
So that's JP off the hook now until Garland's next movie, which I believe is being released by A24 next year. Nice. And then over the next couple of months, Watson will be making a return to do the double bill addendum for the Ben Wheatley ones that he was doing. So we still have Under the Earth to do, which was his COVID movie, and his brand new movie this year, which is the Meg 2.
I'd forgotten about that one.
Which we will be talking about, which he said that he can see like a possible Meg 3 off the back of this, and I'm like, what the fuck is you, what? The trailer for that movie looks fucking hilarious, so I can't wait. And then I'll also be having Richard Glenn Schmidt back to do Flux Gourmet, which will complete our Peter Strickland series, which I need to get arranged before, want them all clear before the end of the year, and I'm planning the next season of that right now. So the next season of Opera Omnia in the works, just trying to nail down my host, and then we'll be bringing that back soon. Chronicle will be finishing its season. In fact, next week, season 4 will conclude. And we're to begin with Trundles On, with the massive, staggering plan that I have for that, which is never ending. And every time I think, oh, I then get another idea, which makes it go, oh! That's what's happening with that. And Marcus, we're saying as well, you will be taking part
any very special project on Podcasts Under the Stairs coming in our in the month of our 10th anniversary. We are doing a series called Pieces in Pieces, which is the movie Pieces from 1982, chopped up into 5-minute installments and then muddled up and released out of order with guest hosts on each 5 minutes. So you did 2 5-minute segments on that, and they will be making their way to the listeners' ears out of order in August. So
I'm excited to hear that. We already recorded my segments for that. I'm really stoked to hear everybody else's little slices of that goofy ass movie.
It's every recording has been brilliant, so I'm very much looking forward to starting to put them out and get everyone else engaged. I have one more recording to do, and then that's them all sorted, all 17 episodes, and they're being released essentially one every day for 17 days. So
that's in August that those come out.
So starting from the 1st of August to the 17th of August, every single day there will be an episode of Pieces and Pieces dropping, and they're approximately from about 20 minutes to half an hour tops.
Sweet.
So there we go. Ladies and gents, thank you very much for checking out this episode of Doing the Nasty. Myself and Mark will be back. And let's aim big. In the next couple of weeks, me and Mark will be back. That's right, I'm putting a loose deadline without committing to a date. We'll be back to do another one of these episodes. We'll be looking at Cannibal or Ultimo Mondo Cannibal, which I've confirmed, by the way, is definitely the Ruggiero Deodato movie from 1977, apparently also known as Jungle Holocaust or Last Cannibal World or The Last Survivor, because it was released about a million times. So we'll be doing that, and we'll be bringing it together with the master of sleaze from the UK, Norman J. Warden, and his classic Terror from 1978. So until then, Mark, would you like to say goodbye?
Goodbye, listeners. Stay nasty.
And I will speak to you next time.
Nasty. They were called nasties, and they were nasty.
Some of the things that we've seen are so horrific.
These films not only affect young people, but I believe they affect adults as well.
An extravaganza of gory violence, capable of depraving and corrupting those who watched it.
I have never seen a video, mister. I wouldn't. I actually don't need to see what I know is in that film.